Welcome to the Future of Learning and Work podcast. I'm your host, Spencer Keir. Each week, I highlight the people and companies shaping the future of education, training, and work. This week's guest is Kelly Smith, founder and CEO of Prenda. Prenda helps launch in-home microschools by providing curriculum, equipment, supplies, and ongoing support. Hope you enjoy the conversation, and don't forget to share and review.
If we could start just with you giving your background and your story leading up to Prenda.
Yeah, sure. So I had a background in technology. I had worked for a variety of software and hardware companies, usually working on products. And a lot of times that involved computer programming. So at one point in 2013, I had sold a software business. It was pre-revenue, really small. It's me and one other person, and we sold it to a venture-backed software company. And I worked remotely for this company. And at the same time, I had some free time, and I started volunteering at the local public library. So I was at the library teaching kids computer programming. My thinking at the time was kids should learn how to code. It's fun. It's interesting. You might get a job someday. But even if you have no interest in getting a job, it's a good way to practice, learning how to think. And I told my own kids that. I'm a father of four, so I would say that to them. But instead of just doing it at home with just us, we opened this up at the library and put posters up in the neighborhood and said, come down and make a video game. And it was interesting to see the kids would come and they would dig in. And, it was kind of this like reticence at first, like, can I do it? Do I have what it takes to do coding? But that ultimately became a laboratory for me, because I got to see kids come in from lots of different perspectives, many of them, struggling in traditional school, maybe getting in trouble, maybe getting bad grades. And I would watch these kids grapple with computer programming, which, anybody that's listening that's had to code something ever, that it's not an exercise in sort of acing the test. In fact, coding feels almost the opposite of kind of my experience in traditional school, which was like, try to know the information and show up well on the exam. Coding is much more about let's get this thing to work. And that can take 10 attempts or it can take 100 attempts. And you just keep going until you get it and you learn from each mistake. So watching kids grapple with that type of learning, which to me felt very relevant to learning in life, that's the type of learning I've done really since leaving traditional, education institutions. That got me wondering, what would this look like if we tried to build a school model where we did not just coding, but we did math and English and social studies and science. We did it all around this idea of just becoming a self-learner, setting a goal, working hard to accomplish it, being okay with failure and mistakes along the way, getting help from friends, getting help from adults, reading things, learning any way you can, but being a learner was kind of at the core of that. And that was the point at which, and this is a longer version of the story probably than you wanted, Spencer, but that was the point at which I said, let's try this. Let's run a school. I had my son and six of my friends' kids, and we were sitting around my kitchen table as a micro school in January of 2018, so 3 years ago. And it's been really fascinating since then to be able to evolve that model. And we can talk a little bit more about what that means, but it's been successful with kids, and they've been able to accept that invitation to care about their own learning and to be part of it and set their own goals. And that has spread. We now have lots of these micro schools in multiple places.
So what is Prenda exactly?
So Prenda helps people run micro schools, people like me, in their own house or other space. Sometimes it's a classroom in a community center, an extra conference room in an office, a studio. It can be in any of these places. But the idea is that person can be a learning guide for 5 to 10 kids. Typically, these are grouped in age. We support kindergarten through 8th grade, but often it'll be, the younger kids like K through 2, and then like a 3 through 5 or a 6 through 8. And so you imagine a group of 5 or 10 of those kids meeting together every day, doing school, but instead of doing it in a, sort of a passive way where it's, sit here and listen while I tell you the information and I kind of do school to you, it's much more about them, driving their education. And we've created scaffolding and supports that allow them to be successful with that approach.
And so you said one of the key differences is that instead of teaching at a student, it's student-centric, student-first. What are some of the key What are some of the other key advantages and differences compared to, say, a public K-12?
Yeah, I think a lot of the parents would point to things like flexibility, a culture of empowerment and kind of positivity. Culture can, of course, vary across institutions, but one of the stories we get a lot from parents that come in is for one reason or another, school wasn't working for my kid. And there was a, you know, we get the stories of the bitter tears in the car in the parking lot outside of the school, you know, and she just didn't want to go in for some reason or another. And that could be academic. It could be things tied to the classroom, but it could also be, you know, anxiety, behavior issues, maybe bullying. There's lots of reasons why, you know, school doesn't always work. And so what we want to do is provide an option for those kids to find, you know, find that safety in that space to be able to do learning in a way that's positive and productive for them. And oftentimes what we found is part of that is giving them content at a rate that makes sense for them, personalizing it. Part of that is being around other kids. And so you have this core group of, you know, up to 10 students that are close in age to you, and you form bonds and connections that are meaningful and that really support the overall learning environment.
I think one of the hesitations with something like a micro school is that it, and there are similarities and an intersection with homeschooling, but homeschooling has a massive stigma. I think over the last year that's changed, and you've probably seen that. What are some of the mental barriers or issues that parents have with micro schools and homeschools, and how have you seen their perceptions change over the last year?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think there is kind of a shifting of tectonic plates relative to how parents think about education. I think a lot of these options were kind of viewed as, you know, maybe a fringe thing, or it's something that only a small percentage, although increasingly parents have been considering it, and this predates COVID. There's lots of this discussion. If you read the forums and the parent, you know, Facebook groups and Reddit threads, there's lots of conversation happening about this. And for every one parent who does pull their kids to homeschool, there's another 10 that are thinking about it, right? So I think the goal for parents, every parent ever is how can I give my kid, you know, what they need to be happy and successful in their life, right? And so what does that look like? I think there's, you know, lots of different answers to that question depending on the kid. But as we've gotten to know kind of the homeschool crowd, what we often find is these homeschoolers, reluctant homeschoolers, or people maybe who haven't made the leap, you know, the things that they're worried about. And this is part of, you know, what you might call a stigma. One is, you know, I want my kid to be around other kids. Like it's hard enough, you know, when it's just our family and they need this interaction, they need this practice with the other students. I want to make sure that we're, quote, doing it right. You know, I want to know that parents aren't going to geek out over the, you know, long names of the standards, but ultimately what society has agreed to as what an education is, I want my kid to have that too, so that they can be conversant with other people and move on to high school and college and in these other places and not be kind of ill-prepared for that. So making sure it's done right. And the third thing for a lot of parents, and this is practical, is it's hard. It takes a lot of work. You have to find all the lessons and curriculum and do the, you know, the prep work and then actually implementing education. So those are kind of three things that I think have maybe prevented homeschooling from being an even bigger, you know, I think we've seen a growth up even before COVID up to 3% or so. We went immediately to 100% of families doing school at home with their kids. I mean, it wasn't all, you know, homeschool the way that's defined, but that was a, you know, a drastic shock. And now you have a lot more people that are saying, well, wait, there's good things about this too. I like being able to be flexible. I like being able to, you know, be talking about aquatic life, marine life, and then just stop right where we are and go to the aquarium, you know, or just having that freedom is, it can be really engaging and exciting for both parents and children. So as parents started to see that, then the question becomes, okay, well, how can I do it? And I think those issues that I outlined kind of linger. What we see as micro schools doing is kind of helping resolve those problems. You don't have to invent it yourself. We've created an academically rigorous, standards aligned, you know, including a test. Now, don't worry if you're a parent listening and you say, I hate the testing. I also hate testing in the sense that it's harming kids and putting a lot of pressure and anxiety on things, but to have kids in a healthy place, doing an assessment and finding out, do you know this or do you not know this? If that can be useful and actionable and low pressure, which is exactly how we do it, we actually see a lot of value to that as well. So there's this kind of middle of the road, we'll often paint this picture of here's kind of the traditional classroom and here's homeschool, and micro school allows you some of the benefits of both of those things.
The micro school setup in terms of class size and structure almost resembles like a 1800s or 1900s schoolhouse. What is it about that structure and why is it ideal?
Yeah, I'm not a historian or an anthropologist. I mean, I think there were probably physical and logistical expediencies that made that the thing in the 1800s. I've had actually read the book and would point all of your listeners to the Sal Khan book, One World Schoolhouse, where he basically makes that point and then analyzes what that could look like in the 21st century. And we've been lucky enough to meet Sal and go over our model with him and have these discussions that there definitely are, you know, similarities here. And I think it can be a beautiful thing. I think, why is it that way? I think humans need other humans. So by yourself isn't good. Humans need the ability, and maybe the real academic reason here is to go back to Benjamin Bloom. I don't know if your listeners follow the academics on this, but Bloom was famous for the Bloom's taxonomy. It's like this different form of learning modes and synthesis being like kind of the best way that you've indicated learning. But later in his career, Dr. Bloom did a research study where he tested one-on-one instruction. And he found that not only is one-on-one better than kind of a lecture to a whole class in terms of, you know, overall learning and the outcomes that you'd expect from that, but it's much better. It's two standard deviations or two sigmas. That's the kind of nerdy social science word for this. So they call it the Bloom's two sigma. You can actually read the Wikipedia page about this. And basically went around shouting like, hey, everyone, the closer we can get to individualizing instruction and to giving one-on-one, the better off we'll be. Well, you know, I think a lot of people thought, great, Dr. Bloom, that's wonderful, but I have one teacher and 30 kids and how is that possible? You know, it's nice to know, but it's not useful. I'd see a lot of what micro schools are trying to do is leverage technology, leverage a small group and get as close as we can to one-on-one where you have an adult that cares, that's vested and motivated, and that student, and these connections are there in place. And part of the way that works is we're leveraging technology and access to not just the information that happens to be in that one adult's brain, but all the information that humans have ever discovered in the history of mankind. So you have access to everything. Then the question becomes, how can I coach you, motivate you, inspire, guide, mentor? But it's much less like, just listen to me, I know the answers. And I think that's maybe the big difference between now and 18, you know, 20s, when you had these one room schoolhouses and it was kind of like, I have this, the one person in your community that might know, you know, where to put a comma in a sentence, you better listen. Where now it's, everything's searchable, you know, all the information exists, and it's much more about how to unlock that in a young learner and get them to a point where they feel ownership and they're empowered and they can find the answers and build the projects and do the work that moves them forward in their education.
Getting a little more into the weeds, what does the normal day of apprentice student look like? I read on your website, there's the three C's, there's conquering, collaborating, and creating. Can you touch on each of those and what those mean?
Yeah, sure. My daughter is a fifth grader. She's in a micro school right now as we speak, as we're recording this. So I'll go through her day. She rides her bike. It's local in the neighborhood. It's a class that happens to be all girls that are right around fifth grade. And so they're girls that are her peers, and they get together. The very first thing they'll do is walk in and sort of they do kind of a community circle where they're able to articulate kind of goals and intentions for the day. Sometimes that can come with, you know, stretching or yoga. We've seen some of the younger kids, or there's a variety of like kind of modes on this and lots of flexibility, but imagine a kind of an initiation moment where you're kind of, I'm in it, I'm here, I'm supporting you. I'm positive. I'm ready to go. The first mode is conquer, as you said, and conquer mode is about setting big goals and tackling those goals. So Molly will have a goal for math, a goal for English, a goal for reading, and a goal for writing. Molly's math is a little bit under grade level right now. So she's actually allocating most of her energy to trying to get math up to grade level. Her reading is, or her English language skills in the learning software that she's using for English is the next grade level. So she's working on sixth grade English. So she's basically spending less time on English, more time on math to be able to kind of balance that out. But she loves the reading and the writing. And so she's also, you know, creating space for herself to be able to do more, just practice writing. And she takes our writing prompts that come through Prenda's software, and she'll take those prompts and make these just fun, silly creations. And if you know her, it's, you know, she's just a fun person. And so it's just a blast to, she'll share these Google Docs with me of things that she's been writing. And it's just fascinating to see what she's putting together. So conquer mode, and that's daily individual goal in each of those four areas where you mark off when you're done. So she'll say, finished with my English goal, didn't quite get my math goal today, but I'll do extra tomorrow. Finished with writing, finished with reading. So when those are done, the class typically winds down. They'll do a collaborative group activity. And this is our collaborate mode is led by the kids, but facilitated, supported by the adult learning guide. So you'd imagine a debate. One of my favorites in the class that I was guiding a couple years ago was one of our students was in charge of the debate. She went over to the bookshelf and found the book, If You Give a Mouse a Cookie. And if you're familiar with that book, there's this whole story about what happens if you give the mouse the cookie. It's hilarious. And she wanted to read the book out loud to the class. So we did that. And then have the debate about whether you should give the mouse the cookie or not. So practicing this, you know, this idea of being able to see multiple sides of an argument. Everybody in the class has kind of a format for preparing for that debate. And they, you know, prepare both sides of the argument. And then the person that's in charge, in this case, this girl, Lydia, she was able to say, okay, you're on the yes side, you're on the no side. You should give a mouse a cookie, you should not. And just hilarity ensued. It was a really fun time. After that, typically a class will take a little break. They'll maybe have snacks or food. They'll go outside. I know Molly was just telling me that her class is doing flag football this week. So they kind of have been rotating through one sport every week, everything from, I don't know, they were messing around with lacrosse and speed walking and, you know, tennis, but this week it's flag football. And she told me she's particularly good at grabbing the flags on defense. So it's, that would be like a little moment in the middle of the day, you know, around eating. And then create mode is the remainder of the time. And create is all about, as you would expect, building something, building a project. That would be, she would work with a partner, find a project prompt from our software and tackle that. And, you know, diving in and sort of customizing it along the way so that it's something that she's truly proud of and excited about. And then there's later, you know, a period where she can show that work to her peers and to her parents and kind of come back and celebrate the work she's done. So it's maybe longer than you wanted, but conquer, collaborate, create with some breaks in the middle and opportunities to just connect and be with the group.
The day sounds very driven by the student. And I think that's also reflected in what I believe is a very intentional word choice in calling, not using the word teacher and using the word guide. Can you explain what's implicit in this word guide and what the role of a guide is?
Yeah, it absolutely. And just it's important to note that Prenda has lots of teachers. So the skill of understanding learning science and pedagogy and what information needs to be included and how to intervene with particular learning challenges. We have those people often, you know, with those upper, you know, higher degrees and certifications and they're supporting this all at the same time. So it's not to take anything away from all of that. What we're talking about in the room where the micro school is happening is as human of an experience as you get, right? This is about inviting a young human being to see themselves as a learner and to take the steps required to sort of become that, become a learner. That's not something that's scientific. That's something that's fundamentally human. It's psychological. You know, it really requires a deep commitment to a particular sort of culture and way of being. And a huge portion of that, as you've pointed out, is autonomy. We want to empower. We want to help kids recognize that you own this, that as much as I, as an adult in your life, care about you, like there's nothing I can really do to force information into your head that's going to help you or change you or motivate you in any way. And I think educators through the ages would agree with me on this, that the best you can do is sort of help paint a picture for them, inspire, motivate, connect. And so just reflecting that reality of that's the fundamental like atomic level of a learning, of learning at Prenda is needing that to happen inside the heart and mind of an individual child. And so interestingly, we have tons of former educators that come and join us, whether they left the workforce, you know, to be home with kids, or several of them retired after a full career teaching in the classroom. They run micro schools very successfully, and they bring all of the learning and wisdom and insights. But the point of not saying these are teachers is really us saying learning is not a thing that you do to someone. It is something that they do. They need to make that decision. And so you can coax and encourage and motivate, but you can't force and you can't coerce, right? And so that's—
It's push versus pull. It's more about creating right. The environment. Absolutely. You said that some of the guides are actually ex-teachers or we're looking for a more flexible schedule. And one of the beauties about the Prenda model is that I think guides are usually only, and students are only in the classroom between 16 and 20 hours a week. Is there kind of a stereotypical person or a profile of a person that you're seeing apply to be a guide?
Yeah, it's the best ones have that spark with kids, right? And so we look for experience with children. So sometimes that's in a classroom, but oftentimes, you know, a great piano teacher or sports coach, somebody who's done dance or musical theater, somebody who's been involved through, you know, youth organizations or something like that. There's just a way, one of the, you know, core values that Prenda talks about in our culture is start with heart. And what we mean by that is when I see a person in front of me, whether that's an adult seeing a student or a parent seeing a child or a child seeing another child, anyone, we're saying the first thing I need to ask myself is, am I seeing a human being here, or am I seeing anything else besides a human being? And I think, that sounds so obvious, maybe trivial. It's deceptively challenging to do that really well. And there are people who have, you know, practiced doing that, being able to see the human. If you can see that human and you're willing to learn, we can give you what you need to be able to create that micro school in a successful way. If you can't see that human and all you can see is, you know, a widget on an assembly line or a box to be checked on a report or an obstacle to when I get to go home or any of the things that normal people, you know, including myself, like often slip into with, you know, any work, it's very normal to sort of get those alternate views in your head. But what we strive for is being able to, you know, push past them, see the human being. And there's a skill to that. There are people who are great at that. And we fortunately have found hundreds of them. And we believe there are thousands more out there. We're excited to work with them to create many more micro schools and serve kids in lots of different communities.
There was a period of time within education where people thought that technology would, if not fully replace the teacher, mostly replace the teacher. I think that's kind of been walked back a little bit. We better understand now that it's more supplemental. What's the role of technology within your schools, and how does it free up the guide and those kind of behind the scenes to do their job more effectively?
Yeah, it's a great point and a great question. As you've heard from everything I've been saying, this is not at all about technology replacing humans. There's a very fundamental, important, and critical piece that humans play in this education. What can technology do? Well, like I mentioned before, there's access to information. There's content no longer has to exist in a human brain. Content can exist in lots of different places, including some really well done learning software that not only you know, has skills and topics that align to the standards and the curriculum that we've agreed on that are important for students to learn, but it also does it in a way that's really scientific, and it's adapting constantly to what a child understands and what they don't understand. An example of this is we require all of our software products that we use in Prenda to be mastery-based. So we want kids to be able to master something before on to the next thing. And so as you think about technology, you know, one thing you could do would be like, here's all the lessons that people need. And you would just require a kid to sort of click a box at the end of each lesson or answer some questions at the end of each lesson. What these tools are going to do is ask questions all along the way. And if you're not understanding it, routing you back to content that can help you learn. So really individualized, mastery-based software tools that really create a great learning environment, but not by themselves. Because if left alone with that software, you just get frustrated, discouraged, depressed. So there's a very much a human element to helping kids work their way through and accomplishing, you know, progress in these things. And the guides, you know, are trained on how to monitor that, how to give the right, you know, kind of support and encouragement at the right times and intervene where needed. And sometimes that requires, like I mentioned before, that can require, you know, scientific input, people who have seen various, you know, learning disabilities or challenges, and have that person come in and be involved as well in a targeted way. So that's, you know, the human piece of this really trying to integrate very well with the software and the technology.
It's my understanding that Prenda couples third-party software with your own proprietary software. What does your own software focus on, and what are some of the gaps or holes that you're still trying to fill through your own software?
Yeah, the best way to think of this is Prenda really didn't set out to be learning software at all. So that wasn't our goal at the beginning. It is really as this micro school that I had in my house, and I got to see these sparks going off in kids, and they're wanting to learn and they're wanting to embrace learning. And so as part of that, I thought, well, great, there's these great software tools. I used Khan Academy from the very beginning, and I still use it. We still use it today. These tools are wonderfully built. There's millions and millions of dollars that have been invested into these things. Like I was hoping, maybe we just run with complete external tools. And what Prenda would be, and this is still true today, is that Prenda at its core is really scaffolding. It's infrastructure that can help this process go. So instead of sort of a guide and some kids and saying, okay, good luck, everybody, it's here's what conquer mode is. The kids log in. Conquer mode says, what's my goal for math? What's my goal for English? What's my goal for reading and writing? And the kids enter their goals and it tracks their goals. So there's that kind of support. It's a, you know, scaffolding or framework for them to become a self-learner. And then similarly on the projects, it's about where do I do the work? How do I, you know, kind of track what are the deliverables that I'm going to put together, and where do I even turn them in, right? Like what actually gets submitted, and becomes, instead of it being turned in like a piece of paper given to an adult, it becomes part of a digital portfolio that each student at Prenda, you know, can go back and see, like, look at these projects that I made. And it's fun to watch them kind of go back and revisit old projects, whether that's a, you know, a video explainer of a diorama that they built, or a full on, you know, my younger daughter wrote a play this year and directed it, including like all of the members of her class as actors in the play. And so she's got the script for the play, and maybe she put like the, you know, the billet, like the piece of paper that she gave to all the parents, like, telling them what's happening in the play. It's just those types of things that, you know, digital assets. So if you think of Prenda as kind of a container for all of that and a scaffolding, the hope was, we'll plug in, you know, pieces from anywhere we can find, as long as they're, you know, standards aligned and mastery based and individualized. And we've been able to do that. And we work with great partners, and we're really thrilled to continually look for great software and great content and great tools. But at the same time, there were places where we weren't finding anything that matched. And so we did eventually start creating, for example, a lot of our project prompts are created, you know, by us, oftentimes with shout outs to, you know, someone else in the space that's kind of maybe seeded the idea, but we've put it into a format that works for us.
Zooming out and looking at the business, Prenda currently has physical micro schools within Arizona and Colorado, as I understand it. You do allow people outside of those states to still use the curriculum for a monthly fee. What's the process of launching a school on the ground?
Yeah, so in Arizona and Colorado, where we have the state funding, one of our goals from the beginning was to make this accessible. So it was really important that not only are we, you know, helping bring this option for education where we can empower learners to as many kids as possible, but we were going to do it in a way that didn't exclude, it didn't leave people out because they can't afford it. And so by doing that, what we do is we'll partner through a, you know, an accredited, state accredited institution, whether that's a school district or a charter school, and we'll work together to make sure that the program is accountable and it's funded, and that allows us, you know, to operate as a partner to these schools. The process is basically families will come to us and say, we really want to do a micro school. And we will say, okay, step one, you need a guide and you need a place to meet and you need the kids. And so the families will kind of get together. They'll talk to each other. Oftentimes one of the parents will be the learning guide that will, you know, kind of take the lead on it. But sometimes it doesn't have to be a parent. It could be someone else from the community. And this is where, you know, if you know your favorite first grade teacher from the school down the street, and you happen to know that she just retired last year, those types of conversations are happening all the time. And so as you find the right person, find the space, find the kids, come to us, we have a process built for, you know, everything else basically. So that includes background check and vetting and making sure that all the proper kind of safety is in place, both on the adults that, you know, that are involved, but also on the space, the physical facility, and even the internet, making sure the internet is safe for kids. So this process of safety, vetting, and verification, followed by kind of onboarding, sending a box of computers, materials. There's a training process where they get to learn about our model and how it works. They also get a live simulation. So you get to run as an apprentice student and experience it yourself with our trainers that will run. And then once that's done, you go, you know, enroll the students that you're talking to in your community. And again, these are people that often know each other. They're hyper-local by definition. So these are people that are neighbors and they'll come all together and say, okay, now we are going to be students of this micro school, and school gets started running the program. The guide is kind of supported and wrapped up in a community that can help answer questions and just improvement and learning along the way. And the kids, you know, start learning and loving school. And typically what'll happen with a micro school like that is the next semester, there's, you know, two of them or three, three micro schools, because the people are having a good experience and they're really, kids like learning, parents are seeing the results that they want, and everybody's happy.
I imagine what you described applies to states where you already have established charter partners. What does it take to expand into another state, and what are some of the barriers there?
Yeah, we're actively looking right now actually for good partners. And you know, you said the word charter. It doesn't have to be a charter school, and we're working with really innovative people at school districts all over the country. The hope is we find schools that share our vision for empowering learners and this philosophy around how can we do this with kids at the center, make sure that they're supported and given this opportunity. And every great educator I've talked to will very quickly jump to people and families and examples from their experience of, you know, who would really love this. And when I hear that, it's like, it's a sign that we've got somebody that really understands what we're doing and why we're doing it. Because this is an option that a lot of families can really benefit from. So we find those people. There is a process where we will sign a partnership with them. So if you're part of a school district or a charter school and you're listening to this, please reach out. We'd love to partner with you. And in the process of that, you know, working together to ensure that this program is viable and it brings the benefits that we're seeing here in Arizona and in other places, bringing them to the families in your, you know, your particular area.
Shifting to a more personal level, you said your kids are enrolled in Prenda.
Sure.
What are examples of the experiences they've had that have just like put a smile on their face? Like you talked about your daughter creating her own play. What do they come home talking about?
Yeah, I mean, it can be anything. And it's really been fascinating to see. My son was in the first Prenda class. And one of the moments when I knew for sure that this was going to work, my son's good. He's a good student. He's done well. He was succeeding and getting good reviews, you know, up until this point in his life. But I had never seen him really like dig himself into something before. And one of the assignments was to create a fictional planet. So you're gonna invent a planet and do the whole kind of taxonomy of species, right? So create the plant life and the animal life and minerals and what the terrain is like. And I watched, you know, that was a project prompt that was pretty loosely open-ended, and he took it with a partner, and he and this girl dug in and spent so much time. I mean, I was watching them, you know, really thinking through, and not just the creative side of it was, you know, fireworks exploding. It was amazing to watch that, which is great. But in addition to the creative side, there was all this analytical, you know, checking things for consistency and is the food chain workout okay if like these types of animals eat these ones and these ones feed off the plants and what's missing? And, you know, it's just being able to think through kind of holistically a whole system like that. It was really fascinating just for me to watch it. And I think I had written the project prompt, but I didn't foresee accurately or adequately what, you know, the level of engagement that a project like that would bring. And then of course we've done, you know, egg drops and rubber band powered cars and lots of science. We use a program called Mystery Science, which is just a really well-designed and well-thought-out science curriculum. It's aligned to the California Science Standards and engaging and fun, and the kids just love that. So I've been in multiple experiences where I've seen, you know, a class, you know, dropping bath bombs into water and then collecting the gas that's emitted and trying to figure out, you know, does it light on fire? And I'm not advocating everyone start lighting things on fire, just to be clear, but lots of things that are possible. Learning, I mean, ultimately what this is we're built for this. Humans want to learn. And I actually really believe that. I think when you encounter a kid who maybe doesn't seem like they want to, I think oftentimes there's something else going on, whether that's kind of protective emotional armor or some sort of distractions. And so a lot of what Prenda's trying to do is get through all of that and get back to learning at its core, which is pleasurable, it's fun, it's interesting. And you know, when you see that happen with a kid and you can kind of see the spark, you see the fire in their eyes, there's no stopping it at that point. And it's really exciting.
The listeners won't be able to see this, but I think what you're talking about also shines through in the smile on your face as you're talking about it. I can tell you're obviously very enthusiastic about this. It's beautiful to see. In closing, is there anything you want to leave listeners with, and where should they go to follow along with the journey?
Yeah, please come to prendaschool.com. Like you mentioned, we have a version of this that any family can do from home, and that costs a monthly fee. But we'd also love for you to introduce us to your favorite administrator or school partner. We really do want to do this in collaboration. We don't see ourselves as competing with a particular education system. We're here to augment and support and provide another option that can really help families. So if you feel like this could be interesting to you, please come check us out, and we'll give you lots of ways that you can work together with us to bring microschools, not just to you and your kids, but hopefully to lots of others in your community.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Kelly.
I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Don't forget to review and share, and stay tuned for more episodes.